This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All month long, we're doing Oregon Wine Month interviews on Thursday, talking to different folks that are involved in wine in the Umpqua Valley. Kevin Coleman in today from Spire Mountain Cellars. Thanks for coming in.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
So, talk about how you got into this whole world of wine.
Well, that's a pretty long story. I'm a chemical engineer by trade, and my first job was with a group that did food and beverage. So I kind of came in through the back door of the wine industry. So I was helping them set up labs and setting up gas chromatographs and all kinds of things for checking out wines in the lab. And soon I started moving on into the front room of the winery, basically. And my specialty was organic acid balancing and malolactic fermentation, which is very exciting stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, we normally do lots of programs on that or not, possibly. But that kind of set the stage because so much about doing this really is understanding a certain level of science.
Absolutely. And one of the things I like to tell people is, you know, I'll joke with them in the winery quite often or in the tasting room, and we'll basically go, okay, I'll go get the whiteboard and we'll start doing some stoichiometry on the wall and explain how these organic acids balance.
Yeah. Now, and so chemical engineering, you did a lot of different things with that, right?
Absolutely. I've worked in refineries. I've worked in municipal water plants, wastewater plants. And, you know, wastewater and winemaking aren't that different. Just different critters.
So when did you get the idea of getting some of your own property and maybe making grapes yourself?
Well, my wife and I, it was our dream. You know, I was involved in the wine industry so much, and I saw there was a lifestyle there that appealed to me. And, of course, I love wine, and so does my wife. And we decided at some point when I have two sons, and both of them were young, we didn't want to live in an area that was too urban. I wanted my boys to learn what life was really about, you know, doing chores and safety with tractors and how to work. So in 1999, we came to the Umpqua Valley and bought a piece of property in Oakland with the primary reason to plant grapes and have a winery.
But it's not as simple as that, is it?
Not even close. You know, you got plenty of government in your back pocket most of the time, and there's a few other items with the wine industry that can be challenging. But overall, it's a great lifestyle. It's a fun business to be in if you like to do two things primarily: talk to people, and work extremely hard.
Well, and how did you pick your property out of all the properties available around the Umpqua Valley?
Well, I knew what varietals I wanted to grow, so I wanted to make sure I matched the land and the weather, the terroir, as we like to call it. I wanted to match that to certain varietals that I knew that I could do something with that was a little different than the industry in general.
And how long was your search before you found that property?
We were looking for a number of years. We looked in Eastern Oregon and Eastern Washington. I lived in Washington for a number of years also. I lived in California. We looked in Temecula. But finding the right ground to grow the varietals I wanted to grow was challenging. I needed elevation. Two varieties that I grow really require elevation. We need really hot days and cold nights for them to come out and be their best.
And which varietals are those?
Well, primarily Tempranillo, but also Cabernet Franc.
And how did you pick those two varietals to focus on?
Well, one, I really like the wine. Two, Earl and Hilda Jones were an influence on me. I actually helped with crush there at Abacella years ago. So I kind of had an influence in that area. And finding a place that had plenty of elevation and the right amount of moisture from the coast and that sort of thing was the toughest challenge. And we found the property that we're on primarily by accident. We were just out for a drive. We dropped off the kids at Grandma and Grandpa's house and just the two of us on a little road trip. And what's this Garden Valley? What's this Cole Road? Let's go up this street. And we're going up, and they were putting a sign in the ground. And we saw them putting it in the ground and drove up and experienced it.
Literally, you're driving by as they're putting the sign.
Correct.
And this would be a for sale sign.
For sale sign for the house. And the guy kind of saw me stop and called me over. And the owner of the property just happened to be driving down the driveway. And he said, "You're just the people I'm looking for." And I'm like, "What do you mean? You don't know him?" And he goes, "California plates, come up and look at the property."
But that may mean that he was hoping that you'd pay a California price for Oregon land.
I didn't. I'm really cheap. Poor guy, he suffered with that. But we did pretty well on the property, and here we are 26 years later.
I imagine that you were talking about your connection with Earl Jones at Abicella, that you guys probably, both having a science background, probably really worked well together.
We did. Actually, it's funny because Hilda was doing most of the lab work for his winery at the time, his wife Hilda. And Hilda and I worked together quite a bit in the lab because she was always like, "Kevin, how do I set up this meter and how do I set up this meter?" And I knew how to do that. And so I got to do lots of punch downs with Earl, and Hilda kept me in line in the lab, and we had a lot of fun together. That was about a 3-year stint working the crush at Abicella.
Wow. So you kind of evolved through this. What year did you finally plant grapes on your land?
We were planting grapes in the Iron Wheel Vineyard, which is our Pinot Noir vineyard, before the boxes were opened in the house when we moved onto the property. So one vineyard we planted in 99, the main heavy vineyard, Tempranillo Cab Franc, several other varietals, that was planted in 2002.
Now, why start planting before you even moved in, or was it because of the time of year?
No, funny. Starting off, we sold grapes. So if you've had a Pinot Noir or Tempranillo that had a platinum or a gold prior to 2012, high likelihood that the grapes came out of our vineyard. But I did have a business plan in place when I started, and I wanted to have 5 years of wine put away before we opened the doors to the tasting room.
And why was that?
Well, I'm one of those guys, you can see me sitting here, I'm kind of an old guy, so I do old guy and old wine. But I don't think wine is ready unless it spends, especially reds, 2 to 3 years in barrel, and then 2 to 3 years in bottle laid down in a cellar. The magic happens under the cork and then released to the public. And I think small wineries suffer from the fact that, you know, every year they have to have wine, new wine coming out because it's a cash flow issue. It's tough.
And that's where the business part and the science part really collide.
Oh, they collide. It's more like a giant impact. But yeah, wine is not ready to drink when you put it in the bottle. Typically, you'll have something called bottle shock. That can last anywhere from a month to 6 months after you bottle it. Bottle shock is just when the wine's a bit confused about going into this new arena coming from the barrel that has a small amount of oxygen.
How do you deal with, you said you had a business plan, you had ideas. How do you have the patience, though? That seems like one of the aspects of growing grapes, of making wine, is an incredible amount of patience, which a lot of people just don't have.
Well, I don't have it either, so I tend to be a little anxious, but I have found that when you are patient, and one of the things I consulted in the wine industry for many years, you know, young winemakers wouldn't realize that they'd make a beautiful wine, they'd taste it, say it's ready to bottle, they'd put it in the bottle and taste it 2 weeks later and go into a panic. Because, like, what happened to this wine? It was so good. It's like, just relax, be patient, let it do its thing in the bottle for a while, and you can overcome bottle shock. So it's kind of interesting.
So you had 5 years worth before you opened, right?
Correct.
And what was the transition between just selling grapes to others and doing your own property, your own label?
Well, primarily we stopped renewing contracts with other winemakers prior to me pulling wines off or grapes off the market. And then I started making wine, so we had a 5-year lull there. Of course, I was still consulting and traveling all over the United States, consulting with wineries and doing my chemical engineering job. So I still had income while I was laying those wines down in the cellar and letting them age and become perfect.
So that seems like a kind of a complicated existence for a while there.
What day isn't complicated?
But I mean, if you're trying to keep track of what you're doing here, you're working other states, you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah, I've never been known to sit still for very long, that's for sure.
All right, we're going to take a break, talk more in a moment. It's an Oregon Wine Month interview on Inside Douglas County, and it'll be a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1, State Representative Virgil Osborne in studio tomorrow on Inside Douglas County. Thursday for May, that means another Oregon Wine Month interview, and Kevin Coleman from Spire Mountain Cellars kind of telling his story about wine involved here in the Umpqua and his background. I wanted to ask you, though, before we kind of get back into some of your story, when you think about Oregon Wine Month, talk about that and what's going on.
Well, you know, it's funny. The California wine business has been around for so long, has gotten so big. And Oregon is almost 180 degrees from California. In a lot of ways, we have certain varietals that are much, much better than California. We're not as big, we're not as commercial, we're not as well advertised. But the beauty of Oregon wine is people can get a feel for what the wine lifestyle is really about. You know, when you go to a winery in the Umpqua, for example, quite often you'll meet the winemaker. If you don't meet the winemaker, you're going to meet family of the winemaker that's taking care of the tasting room. There's a more relaxed, more sit and enjoy and look at the vineyard and drink the wine and you know, eat a charcuterie plate or something. But it's not stand at the bar, be in a hurry, get in and get out. Are you here to buy wine or what?
And I know I've talked to somebody a few years ago who was in Napa for totally unrelated reasons. They had a professional conference and really didn't have time to go check things out very much. But one night, a group of them they had about an hour. And they just felt, and they are all from here, and they all felt like, gosh, this is like kind of like a roller coaster of, you know, how quickly can you get people in and out and how much money can they spend? And they said it was so different than the experience that they were used to here.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things we do at Spire Mountain, and I'm going to give COVID a positive review about this, we were able to stay open during COVID. And one of the reasons is because we have a very, very big footprint. Our tasting room is an old barn. We have a big outdoor patio, so there's plenty of room to spread out and not be in contact. And we started during COVID setting people at tables and bringing the tastings to them. And we haven't stopped doing that because it's such a nice, they come to the bar, they choose what they want for a flight. They go sit down, take in the view, start having good conversation with their friends and family, whoever they're with. And we bring the tastings to them. It's kind of it's a different foot forward compared to California by far, but even different than most places in Washington. You know, you're going to come and sit and enjoy the view and sip wine and enjoy yourself.
And around the Umpqua Valley, I mean, you mentioned your connection with Earl Jones, and I'm sure you've got relationships with some of the other winemakers too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I always tell people, you know, they come in, they taste wine, they buy some wine, they're like, where should we go next? And you've got, you know, Joseph Jane, you've got Cooper Ridge, you've got Haynes Creek up in Elkton, you've got Beckley, you've got so many wineries, and they're all extremely unique. I really like to endorse people. If you're going to come here for a weekend from out of town, say Portland or San Francisco, you know, come to a winery and you'll find they'll recommend two or three other wineries to go to. Your weekend will evolve into something that you'll have a great time at because of the recommendations by the local people.
So how has Spire Mountain evolved in the last few years?
We've gotten a bigger footprint. We do a little more entertainment. We have a number of musicians that come out and do original music at our facility. So we're kind of getting known for being a place where you can sit and listen to someone play the guitar, or, you know, not big bands and groups. We do have some evenings coming up. We have a late night evening with Second Chance. That's a local group. And people really enjoy the entertainment side of it because we're a large footprint and people can sit and enjoy themselves.
As you kind of look at the future, you have some ideas for things you want to do down the road?
Well, I mean, I want to continue to make great wine. I think we just released our 2019 Pinot and Tempranillo, and we did a reserve this year, first reserve I've done in many, many years. And frankly, I believe it's the best Tempranillo I've ever made. And I've been making wine for 40 years. So I want to continue that trend. I want to continue the trend of being a friendly place where people can come, bring friends out. Like, for example, our club membership. We made it very, very easy for people when they become a club member to be able to bring friends and do tastings for free. So now they have a place to go when friends come to town to visit. So we kind of set ourselves up to be that place to go to and sit and visit.
Now, do you have maybe this applies to what you produce or maybe not. Do you have a favorite wine varietal that you like to drink?
I get asked that question a lot. Primarily, it depends on what I'm having for dinner. I'm one of those people that Pinot Noir, it has to be sitting next to food. My Tempranillos, because we do, I haven't told you this yet, but I'm a vintage true winemaker. I spent my career making synthetic wine with people. You know, our wine has to be the same every year. There's not a vineyard in the world that grows grapes exactly the same every year. But when you go to a grocery store and pull a bottle of wine off, and you open that wine, it's the same every time. That's because they hired someone that did what I used to do for a career to make wine the same. Now I do just the opposite. I grow great wine in the vineyard and try to not mess it up in the winery. So when you come to my facility and do a tasting, you may do a vertical tasting with Pinot Noir, or you may do a vertical tasting with Tempranillo. And there'll be five completely different wines sitting there, and you get to taste them side by side. It's kind of fun.
And I would think that would be a lot more fulfilling.
People, I think, really enjoy it. It gives us an opportunity to talk about what happened that year. Why is that wine different that way? We have a few wines in the house that have nicknames. We have the most French-style Pinot Noir I have ever made. Her name is Guinevere. She's a very elegant French lady. We have Don Quixote, which is the most Spanish-style Tempranillo I've ever made. It's very high in stearic acid, which is what's in raw tobacco. So it's the nose and the initial hit of that wine when it hits your palate tends to kind of have this flavor of a raw cigar in your mouth. So some people say, oh, you shouldn't tell people that. But I'm like, that's the wine. It doesn't have to be your favorite. There's four others right here on the counter. Which one do you like? So we have a lot of fun with it.
What else should people know about Spire Mountain and wine this time of year?
Well, first of all, it's a great way to go spend some time and really be able to have a good conversation with friends and family. I think it's a style thing. You know, you go for a hike in the morning or you go fishing in the morning and then come out and see us, and you can sit in a chair, enjoy the view, enjoy some nice weather, and drink some great wine.
And as you look around the industry, what do you think is ahead for wine in the Umpqua?
I believe our winemaking here in the Umpqua Valley over the past 15 years has only gotten better. Used to be you'd come to this area and do wine tastings, and you may have one or two wines that were technically flawed. You won't have that anymore. You may find a wine that you don't really like. It's not your favorite, but it's not a flawed wine. It's just not your favorite. I think the professionalism and the ability to make world-class wines in the Umpqua Valley have really come to fruition in the past 5 years.
And how do you think our area, how do we get the message about the Umpqua out there when we have so many different varietals versus, you know, Willamette Valley, which is really known for a couple?
Well, I think the majority of people here locally, they spread by word of mouth. The quality of the wines and the quality of the wineries here. I think they're the best advocates to advertise us worldwide. I want my winery to grow at the rate of word of mouth. If it grows faster than that, I may be understaffed. I may not have the right things in place when people come. But if I grow slowly and consistently by word of mouth, people always have a connection when they come in. And that way they feel comfortable bringing friends and saying, hey, I got this great place. You got to come. You got to come experience this with me.
And for people who aren't familiar with you, what's your website?
It's spiremountainsellers.com. And they can find us there. My daughter-in-law, Destiny, actually runs our events and scheduling. We're open Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 5. Some Saturdays, usually once a month through the summer, we'll be open late. And, 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, so we'll have entertainment and that sort of thing.
All right, out of time for now. Kevin Coleman from Spire Mountain, thanks for coming in.
You're very welcome.
1258 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.